Now, back to Stand Up with Pete Dominic on Indy, Sirius XM 104.
All right. Welcome back to the conversation. Thanks very much for tuning in. Stand up with me on Twitter at Pete Dominic. You can give me a call anytime, and I really hope that you will join this conversation with Dr. Aaron Carroll. The phone number is 866-994-6343. Generally, he joins us in the third hour on Wednesdays. Today, he's in the second hour, which is great because all those of you who listen more in this hour will have the opportunity to ask him questions. And as always, we do everything we can to generate Twitter following for our guest, Dr. Aaron Carroll. He is on Twitter, at Aaron E. Carroll. My friend Joe Himpleman on Twitter writes, "Time for my weekly unfollow. Follow of at Aaron E. Carroll to make at Pete Dominic feel better." Let's see. He is an associate professor of pediatrics, director of the Center for Health Policy and Professionalism Research at Indiana University Medical School. He's the author of Don't Swallow Your Gum, Myths, Half-Truths, and Outright Lies About Your Body and Your Health, and Don't Cross Your Eyes, They'll Get Stuck That Way, a sequel to that debunking myths, half-truths, and outright lies about your body and your health. He blogs at The Incidental Economist, Dr. Aaron Carroll, on Twitter, at Aaron E. Carroll. Melanie, what is the how many followers does he currently have right now? You know? Let's see. I can do it.
Give me one second.
All right. Hi, Aaron.
Someone prepared.
Now I put her on the spot.
Alfred gained one.
We got to keep plugging. We got to keep plugging Alfred, too, at Alfred Schultz as well. Although on Aaron's time, that's going to be.
Okay.
I don't mind sharing. It's all right.
I wrote it down, so I'll keep you updated.
I have 74, 75 right now. That's what I have. What do you have, Melanie?
I have 74, 77.
Okay, so he's got two difference there. Maybe it's my app. Hi, Aaron. Good morning. Thank you very much for being here.
Oh, my pleasure.
All right, so there's a lot to talk with you about, as there always is. I think that I want to first address soda.
Okay.
We talk soda for a moment?
Yeah.
Because earlier Melanie mentioned that she hated the idea of a ban on soda because she loves drinking a bucket. A gallon of Diet Coke.
Okay.
It's not a gallon. It's a Sonic, like, large Diet Coke.
We don't
have
Sonic in New York.
Well, it's in the
doesn't
South.
Mean she doesn't love it.
You love
it. Because it doesn't exist in New York doesn't mean that the rest of us don't enjoy
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Do you
it's
enjoy
not like
soda,
I don't
Aaron?
Dream about it.
I don't drink as much of it as I used to, but I do on occasion, sure.
Well, the bottom line is you don't agree with this idea, this Mayor Bloomberg idea of limiting. And why are you talking about it now at the Incidental Economist? What's come up with it?
Because a paper came out this week, and these pop up every once in a while, which show that that one, people drink like a lot of soda. Two, people that drink more soda. We're talking sugar soda, not diet soda. Nobody ever talks about diet soda. But two, people that drink more sugared soda tend to be more obese. Three, if they stopped drinking the soda and didn't replace the calories with anything else, they would lose weight, and therefore it would be awesome to ban the soda. And the problem is that while one, two, and three are perfectly factually correct, there's very little evidence that four is actually true, and I think there's even some evidence that four is false. That this idea that just banning this, and again, we're not banning people from drinking large amounts of soda. We're just banning the idea that certain restaurants and certain businesses can sell soda in a container larger than 16 ounces at a time. In other words, you could still buy three 12-ounce sodas. You just can't buy one 16-ounce or one 17-ounce soda while still letting everything else be exactly normal. It's a flawed way to do it. It won't work. It's sort of...
Why are you so convinced it won't work? I mean, because aren't you for all the bans and smoking and having those work?
Okay, here's why I'm convinced. Because there's actual studies that show if businesses were to offer instead of the 16-ounce soda or 20-ounce soda, that they would just start bundling two 12-ounce sodas, there's evidence that people actually choose that more often. That because they're worried about not having enough, they wind up buying 24 ounces of soda instead of the 16-ounce soda and wind up actually drinking more than they would have before. Evidence, soda. I mean, they did actual research, which said, like, they did behavioral research to look at what people would do. So you could have the effect.
What's wrong with people that drink that much soda? Do they not know how horrific it is for you and how How fat and unhealthy it makes
you? Well, see, we keep saying horrific, and we're making a moral judgment about people that drink a lot of soda. It's calories. That is all we are literally concerned about here. I don't know why we have this moral problem with soda, while, like, the idea that lemonade
is because there's
fine.
Good calories and bad calories.
I don't know, but lemonade doesn't get this kind of, like, you know, attack, nor does sugared iced tea. It's just soda. People seem to have a real problem with soda. In other words, if I said you were ordering, a 20-ounce beer, nobody would go, oh, the horrors. No, of course, it'd be awesome. We'd all be thrilled about it. But, you know, a 20-ounce beer probably has as many, if not more, calories than a 20-ounce soda. But we're going to ban the soda. And don't get me wrong, I am not looking to ban the beer. But why are we picking on soda? Why is why is that empty calorie fine, but a Cheesecake Factory piece of cheesecake, which has 1,000 calories, is, oh, that's so cute or so sweet.
Well, because people don't drink and consume those things the way that
Have you been to a restaurant lately?
Yeah, come on,
portion.
Aaron. Nobody's eating cheesecake
they're
drinking
everything
soda.
Everything in a restaurant, everything from the salad has way more calories than people expect that it does, to the fries have way more calories than people expect to do, the dessert. Why do we pick on that? Now, okay, I'm being a little bit – I know I'm pushing you a little bit, and I know I'm pushing your buttons.
I see your point. No, but you do make, I think, an interesting point. I'd like to just expand on that. But, you know, soda – people don't realize this, but a can of soda,
yep,
and a can or a jar or whatever of Snapple
– right.
I mean, oftentimes the lemonade, the iced tea, the Snapple and fruit punch, whatever, has more sugar.
Yes.
In it. I explain it to my daughters by I hold up the can, and they never drink any of this stuff, of course, unless it's really watered down. I hold up the can and I show them literally by volume. I hold my fingers apart how much of it is raw sugar, and I think that people don't know or forget. When they have like a lemonade or an iced tea or any of these drinks, almost all of them
right.
have just as much sugar than the soda. But aren't we banning those? Wouldn't that ban those
thing.
Drinks as well?
Why should we? Why are we talking about banning? Okay, here's how I do with my. I mean, I'll be honest with you. This is what we do with our kids. The problem that
your kids are huge
is soda is sugar. Fine, switch to diet. Okay, why do we not have a huge campaign on just don't drink the sugar? The sugar is what we're all concerned about. Why can't we just convince more people to drink the side? But instead, everybody seems hell-bent on attacking soda. And this is where I get into my problem because I have friends who treat soda as if I'm feeding my kids poison. And I'm talking my kids really only drink diet, caffeine-free soda.
That's the way my wife sees it.
But that is poison. But they let their kids snack and eat all day on calories and are like, oh, yeah, have some more chips. Why is the soda?
No, we're consistent on that.
Because well, you might be consistent on that, but I know tons of people who are not, and I can look out in society and see this as well. We have attacked soda. So in other words, diet. If everything is the sugar, as you've been talking about for the last 10 minutes, why can't we just switch everyone to diet? But immediately everyone goes, no, diet's no good. Well, then it's not the sugar. It's because we have some problem with soda. And I don't seem to get that because the problem is the sugar. So drink diet if that is your problem, and try to get more people to drink diet. But banning, you know, soda or banning even like sugered soda, which is really what they're doing, it seems like.
Do you work for the soda lobby?
No.
I mean, this is insane how bad your advice is. Let's go to Brandon in Iowa, Dr. Aaron Carroll at Aaron E. Carroll, 2 R's, 2 L's on Twitter. Go ahead, Brandon. Brandon, you're on, Santa. Go ahead.
How you doing, Dr. Carroll and Mr.
Good.
Dominic?
Yeah, that's right, Mr. Dominic.
I was just curious because I hear a controversy.
Good point. Great point.
What happened?
I think what he said is great. I love what he said there. What do you think about that?
Did you hang up on him?
No, I don't know what happened. Just lost the connection.
That was really sort of bizarre. It's like he's like aliens just took him.
Maybe it's your friends.
No,
the
you
soda
know what?
Lobby.
The soda, the big soda got him.
Yeah, the big soda just took him out.
You all better
we're
be
having
careful.
Phone.
Don't make calls hurting soda.
Give us a call at 866-994-6343. I think we just had some phone issues. I don't know. Aaron, don't worry. Alfred's on it.
I can't. Well, that makes me feel better.
You can also tweet me at Pete Dominic, at Aaron E. Carroll. Are we done with the – well, if we get –
No, but see, this is the thing. I'd like to know – I actually want to know where you're from. In other words, if I said why switch everybody to diet, is that okay then?
I don't know.
You're going to say no because deep down inside you know it's not the sugar. You hate soda.
Well, I drink soda from time to time.
That's fine.
I just generally with my whiskey. But I don't, I hate being, I don't mind, I'm everything in moderation, I think. But I just think that, I feel like the reason why, you know, Bloomberg went after soda is because that's the thing that people really abuse and don't realize how much damage it's doing in their body.
Well, if we
and
want
you, to, you do agree that it's very bad for you,
again,
and people,
I just
it's not like, Aaron, it's like people will have like a lot of soda all day with every meal. They don't do that with ice cream or donuts.
Oh, first of all, I think you're totally not. You know,
don't even think of arguing with me. I'm right and you're wrong. Moving on.
Okay.
I know this. I'm a comedian.
Even if you think that soda is the problem, and that the problem, and again, we're talking only about obesity. We're talking about the fact that that you know, then soda is because people are drinking too many calories and too many beverages. Then we could talk about ways to try to limit that. We could discuss a tax on calories. We could discuss ways, but banning a certain size that is only, again, doesn't affect free refills and doesn't affect the idea that you could buy still tons of this. It's just the one size that it gets offered, banning it, but not everywhere. Only in the restaurants and only in the places that didn't lobby hard enough to get exceptions in the rule in New York. And to let other beverages, which have just as many calories, by the way, still be sold in very large size. What do you think? Is that really a holistic solution to try to get at the obesity problem? Or is that just because we're just trying to, like, you know, go after one thing to make us feel good that might not only not work but actually could backfire and then could lead to people going, well, you know, there's nothing we can do anyway. Let's never bother to try anything.
Well, why do you, though, but don't you agree with the smoking bans and regulations against smoking?
That's not how it started, Pete. It started with a big tax on tobacco. We did that for a long time. Then it started with advertising. And finally, it got down to where we wouldn't do it. Plus, we ban it outright by age. We don't say that, like, you can't buy a certain amount of tobacco. We just say that, like, you know, you can't buy it unless you're 18. And if you want to be 18, smoke all you want. Go ahead. Buy the carton and smoke it in your house. It's not illegal. It's not that you can't buy it. We just said you can't get it until you're 18. And we attacked it in 10,000 different ways that had nothing to do with the ban on size. And
well,
that's
also the thing about smoking, though, is there's no secondhand soda. Like, if you drink soda, it's not affecting me.
Well, that's how they got it at the end. But that took, it took decades before we got to that argument.
Joe, Long Island, you're on with at Aaron E. Carroll. Go ahead.
Hey, what's up, Pete? It's your moderate Republican friend, Joe.
Hey, moderate Republican friend, Joe.
So I got 2 points, and I'll make them quick. One, I totally agree with, you know,
Dr. Carroll?
Oh, my God.
Me?
It's a big soda.
Is he gone, too? What the hell happened? What? My wife is now texting me. She says, diet soda is horrible, too. It has that aspartame, which is horrible.
Oh, see? Okay, then let's have this discussion. That's fine, because now we're not talking about obesity and sugar, and which is what the only thing the law was supposed to get. We're now talking about the fact that people don't like soda. So aspartame is going to be attacked, but as my second book showed, all of, you know, the evidence against aspartame is almost nothing, let alone the idea that it actually kills people. There have been huge studies. There was a study I remember, like, where they took monkeys and they made them drink ungodly amounts of aspartame for like 17 years, 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year, for 17 years, and they showed that there was really no impact on the cancer. There have been studies of rats. It took like two generations of rats before they could show that, like, aspartame actually might be linked to cancer, and what it turned out was that the rats were just genetically more likely to get cancer. It didn't have anything to do with the aspartame, and all of the studies across the board just can't find this magic link, and any of the studies have huge doses of aspartame, way more than you would ever get in any kind of soda or any kind of diet. There's just no evidence for this. And so it's another thing where people just are sure that somehow this is bad for you, or sure that this is somehow inherently bad. There are people that just don't like soda, and that's fine. And I have no problem if you don't want your kids to drink soda. Again, I've made a choice for my kids. They don't drink really sugared soda or soda with caffeine, and we limit their intake of even diet caffeine-free soda to a small amount because we believe that everything should be in moderation. But there's just no reason for, like, a cherry-picked ban.
Let me try Joe again. I got a whole bunch called. Wow, the soda conversation locked the phones up. Joe, go ahead. Let's try this again. Hopefully our phones are okay.
You're totally right that people are going to go and buy as much as they want, whether it's a ban or not. But going back from what you just said, Dr. Carroll, about the diet soda, I mean, I truly believe that it's a poison. You know, there have been other studies where diet soda has been given and people...
No! You got, hey, is there something wrong with the phones?
It's got to be. I mean, it can't be.
Ian in Ohio.
Although I'm on the phone.
Well, that's weird that making, you know, that they get cut out like that. And that's never happened. I apologize, Joe, twice to you. The earlier call is very frustrating. I'm sorry. Behind the scenes, I'm screaming.
No,
not
don't.
That it's any of our
Just
fault.
Take your calls on the right side from now on. Does that make sense to you, Pete?
Well, Aaron's on the right side.
But you can put
callers. Of course I'm on the right side. When am I not on the right side?
You can put callers on the right,
too.
I
have no idea what we're talking about. Okay, so put callers on the right. Okay, let's try Ian in Ohio.
Hey, Pete. Hey, Dr. Carroll. I agree with Dr. Carroll. I mean, I just don't understand. I mean, the tax on beer in Ohio is 18 cents for a 12-ounce bottle,
mm-hmm.
which, let's say, costs around a buck and a quarter or something like that. So
yep.
it's, I don't know, 10, 12%, whatever the math is. Just tax it.
You'd not hear me say that is as much of a problem. That also has ups and downsides, but I think that's a more rational way to go about this than a ban on certain sizes of soda in certain locations.
All right. Well, thank you.
All right. Michelle in Connecticut.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to say that, you know, there are bans on certain things or taxes on certain things like smoking or even alcohol, where it can potentially affect others, I could get. But when something is affecting yourself, you know, like a soda.
But it's not, though, Michelle. And let me try to make my dumb argument, and then I'll let the pro do it. But to me, I'm not saying that I don't know that the government should be the nanny in this. I get that argument. I get the kind of libertarian argument. But if you are on my insurance policy and you don't take good care of yourself, I am affected by that. I mean, the bottom line is we have an obesity epidemic in America, and New York City, of course, a lot of cities have a bigger problem, if I'm not mistaken, Dr. Carroll. And so I'm making the argument, Michelle, that it does affect you when people in large groups don't take care of themselves. That's what lends itself to.
I'm disappointed only in the sense that, like, you're literally making the argument that people make when they don't want to, like, expand insurance. Because should we stop motorcycle riders and should we stop
exactly.
people from
no,
eating
no,
every
no.
other
I'm not
why,
saying
why
I'm not
okay
making the argument that we should do it. I am making the argument that it doesn't just affect the person who's
but
doing
if you're
it.
You're going to make the argument that we should have this kind of law because it affects other people, then you got to own that. It's like, well, it's calories. And if then it should be just as much of a ban to eat the cheesecake or just as much of a ban to drink the beer. It's like there's nothing magical about the glucose or calories that come from soda versus anything else.
I disagree. People aren't abusing and drinking
–
eating cheesecake all day long?
No, but they eat calories.
They have a soda with every meal. That
no.
drink
no,
is what
there's no evidence. See, this is where there's no evidence for that. There's no
How
evidence.
How dare you talk to me about evidence? I don't want to hear about evidence.
There's no evidence that the people
I want to be right without
soda.
Evidence, with feeling. I feel this way. I've
because
seen people
soda.
Drink
you hate soda.
I drink
fine.
Soda. I don't hate soda. You're putting words in my mouth. Hold on. Let me get a soda. To prove it, take a picture of me.
A calorie is a calorie is a calorie.
Correct.
Okay, it doesn't matter what you put in your mouth. Okay, you can put it.
I hate fat people. Okay.
Then tax calories. Again, I have. If you want to talk about taxing calories, that would be
tax
at least a
fatties.
Rational solution.
Just overweight people should be taxed. You should have a tax for every pound you're above your goal weight. I don't like fat people who drink soda in public, if you must know.
They're drinking diet soda.
That is totally fine.
But you can't tell. So you hate them all?
I hate all people who are overweight, even by 5 pounds.
Well, okay.
How about ice cream?
Yeah, I hate them too.
But the idea that, like, we've attacked this one form of calorie. Oh, now I'm going to get. We've attacked the way that it is sold in certain establishments and in certain sizes at certain times. It is the ultimate cherry picking. If we want to talk about a holistic, like Denmark for a while taxed fat. You know, it's like that is it didn't work, mind you. But at least it was a.
That's where I want to live. Then, Even if it didn't work.
It didn't work. It actually backfired, and they wound up getting rid of it in like
There's not year. One fat person in Denmark.
No. It actually because like, of caused that. The economy to sort of, I mean, again, it hurt the economy. People learned that they could just drive into Germany to get their super fatty cheese at a much cheaper price. It actually hurt the local establishments who can no longer sell. And within a year, they'd actually like repealed the tax. Of course, that also shows you how awesome the government of Denmark is that they could enact and repeal such a law in like a year when we can't get anything done ever. But at least that was a rational sort of way to say, well, at least we're going to go after our nutrient, not
to
a
be
beverage.
Fair, there's nine people and they all agree on everything in Denmark. Michelle, thank you. Joan in New Jersey.
Yeah, good morning, both of you. I love
there's probably more people in New York City than there is in Denmark. Sorry, Joan.
No. That's okay.
At Aaron E. Carroll, are you following him? Let me interrupt you nine more times to annoy listeners.
until Big Soda cuts her off.
Yeah. Big Soda will cut her off. Go ahead, Joan. I apologize.
I think you're forgetting one of the more serious implications of soda, whether it's sugary or diet, is the bone loss, the problem of leaching calcium from bone.
Yeah,
the
that's I hate to say, but that's a myth, too. That's also in our book. That these are like myths.
What is she talking about?
She's talking about the fact that there are people who argue that if you drink too much soda, to like the phosphorus or other elements in the soda will replace the calcium in your bones. You get brittle bones, and you get actually diseased. And actually, there's no real evidence for that either.
Joan, why do you believe that?
Well, I'm 65. I've been drinking diet soda all my life, and I have osteopenia.
Yeah, but that is
a very common thing that happens to people as they age because it's a very natural part of the aging process. And again, this is
with women especially, right?
You got to take a deep breath. People are living longer than they've ever lived at all.
Uh-huh.
People are living healthier lives than they ever lived before. For all our screaming and yelling, the human race is being healthier than others. The stuff
you're the one that makes the argument that the life expectancy has not gone up, though. So hold on a second.
I say life I think average life expectancy at birth in the United States has not increased in the last few decades. But people have been drinking soda for a long time. It is not the soda which is keeping us from aging or getting older. It is at some point we just reach sort of the limit of what the human body will do. But it is not as if since the introduction of soda, people are dropping all over the place because their bones are too brittle. We're doing just fine as a race.
Are you saying Joan should have a soda?
I'm saying that Joan should have a diet where nothing is really out of moderation, where she gets the right number of nutrients and calories in the right combination in a way that makes her very happy and that she has a good life and stops panicking that drinking an ounce or two of soda every once in a while is going to hurt her in some way.
Well, nobody drinks an ounce or two.
Well, we're talking again about 16 ounces, like at a time. If it makes Melanie happy once in a while to have a huge soda from Sonic, fine. As long as she's otherwise living a perfectly healthy life,
Melanie bathes in soda. She takes a bath in soda. She told us. I know that wasn't for air, Melanie, but I have to tell people.
Well, but bathing. Why are you opposed to bathing in it? There's no proof that that's bad.
Well, that's a good point. On Twitter, L Battle. Hey, Joan. Thanks, Joan. Do you?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of what Dr. Carroll said about the myth of the bone loss?
Well,
does that change your mind?
I'm not 100% sure.
This is why those studies are like always they take rats and they feed them ungodly amounts of something and then they detect some minor change or they do something in the lab. They've never done studies where they've measured actual people drinking actual soda.
But you just used a study on monkeys with the aspartame as evidence for what you were saying. You're contradicting yourself.
No, showing there's no harm. If I give them a ton of stuff and there's no harm, I am convinced. Because then a little stuff is not going to do harm. All right? Does that make logical sense?
Yeah.
But if I give them a ton of stuff and there's a minor bad thing, well, then we know not that the people shouldn't be drinking a ton of stuff. But we don't know in general that, hey, soda makes your bones brittle. So, in other words, if you do a monster overdose and there's no harm at all, well, then come on. We can feel pretty safe that there is no danger.
I think people should stop following at Aaron E. Carroll. Do not follow him. Two R's, two L's. If you're following him, stop following him. Melanie, how many followers has he lost based on that?
People get very angry about soda. This could hurt me.
he's just stayed with the two.
I know. I'm telling you, soda.
He's only up two.
It's hurting him. Yeah, he's only up two for the whole hour.
Wow.
Don't gain fans by not hating soda.
Yeah, I mean, my soda bath last night, I'm really angry.
It's good for the skin, I'm told, though.
Yeah,
that's what you do.
Really, it's a good exfoliant.
Melanie does have good skin. The brilliant Keith in New York is on with the brilliant Dr. Aaron Carroll at Aaron E. Carroll. He is pro soda. He works for Coca-Cola's Aaron Carroll. Go ahead, Keith.
So, interestingly enough, the biggest problem the court seemed to have from their questions, they haven't issued a ruling yet in the appellate division, is that the exceptions. And you can go under this ban and buy a 2-liter soda to your heart's delight at a supermarket.
Right.
But you can't go and buy one in the corner store.
Correct.
You can go and buy it in a 7-Eleven, but you can't go and buy it from the bodega. You can go and buy it at a Starbucks if it's in a certain drink, but not if it's in a different drink.
Correct.
That's one, and that's a huge problem in terms of, you know, actually curbing behavior. But even a bigger fundamental issue, I have a 3-year-old. I'm sure you have kids. Do you know how much sugar is in their juice?
Yes. I stop them from drinking juice as often
now,
as I do.
I don't drink soda. I don't like it. I don't like the fizz. I don't like seltzer. I don't like soda. And you know what? I have a problem with this. The same reason that your last guest had a problem with the surveillance program is it's a restriction on people that has absolutely no place. And if people just say, this doesn't affect me, I don't care, it is just one more. If it has an effect of helping the majority of people, I am not knee-jerk, you know, I'm not a Randian libertarian, I'm a Locke libertarian. I believe that government does have a place putting restrictions that help the most needy. This does not help the most needy. It looks like it does, but in effect, when you look at the data, it doesn't. And giving the government the right to go and ban things just because it has a feeling that it helps is exactly the worst thing you can do.
Overweight people drinking soda?
I think, first of all, that the caller's not only – I think the caller's correct. But, I mean, truly, if you buy this argument, then why in God's name do we let people drink more than one, like, 6-ounce alcoholic drink? Why don't we just ban that?
Well, we did in the 20s.
Correct. And then it got repealed, and it was a monster problem. I mean, but that – it's the same argument. It's like, well, it would probably – in fact, I can make an argument that it would probably be far more beneficial to the health of society if we, you know, banned alcohol or banned, you know, certain things. But it's like we just don't. That's not what we do in the United States, nor the rest of the world for that matter.
So, all right. Thank you, Keith. Talking to Big Soda's Dr. Aaron Carroll. Michael in Florida, you're on.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hey, Michael.
Horrible show.
I blame the people that are bought and paid for by the sugar lobby.
Now everyone knows
like
I'm
Dr. Aaron Carroll.
Big poor and big soda. It's a huge conglomerate.
Hates poor people. Hates people who drink soda. I mean, loves people drink soda. I'm just
no,
so
I love poor people. I'm for big poor. You know, I'm fighting for that lobby.
Oh, right. Go ahead, Michael.
So I'm married. I have 3 children. So I'm very concerned often about what I'm giving my children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 7, 5, and 4. Pete, I love the way you talk about your kids, by the way. And my best friend is a dentist, and he says that aside from the sugar and the caloric intake, that it is possibly the worst thing you can put in your mouth for your gums and your teeth. So what do you say to that, doctor?
Everything that sort of has acid is bad for your gums and your teeth if you don't brush your teeth. So let's get back to the idea that if you have it in moderation as part of a diet and you also brush your teeth and take care of yourself, you're going to be just fine. And so it's like anything, you know, there are lots of juices, which are also acidic. And if you pour them in your mouth and then you don't brush your teeth and you leave them sitting in the teeth, that's bad for them too. So is just food. But again, you know, we have to get back to like, there's lots of things that are bad for teeth, including, you know, the number one real thing that predicts whether or not you're going to get cavities or everything is sort of
meth.
You get it mostly from moms. Mother-to-child transmission of bacteria is like the number one sort of link.
What do you mean? Like just genetically?
No, it's because cavities are caused by bacteria, and there's a lot of good evidence that shows that brushing teeth isn't as much, you know, it's good.
What did you say, moms?
Yeah, mom-to-child transmission of bacteria is, like, the number one way.
How does a mother transition?
How do you think? It's like it just gets on your, you know, food transmitted or touching, you know, just
– Why is it mothers and not fathers?
I think it's just because there must be amount of time that gets spent. But, I mean, there was a great study a number of years ago. I'll pull it up that – that, you know, just they can track the bacteria from mom's mouth to the child's mouth.
Evidence.
But you know, it's not – the reason kids get cavities is not soda. The reason kids get cavities is not because of any one thing. It's a holistic, problematic thing that includes how susceptible they are to certain bacteria, how
my
well
daughters,
they take care
of the daughters
long,
are
do they do
probably else? Have less sugar than almost most kids in America. They take better teeth. They take better care of their teeth and gums than most kids in America. My kids floss, mouthwash, and brush every day, twice a day.
Right.
They never get these sugars. And my daughter had four cavities,
right.
And my wife took it so personally.
That's right. And, listen,
and it's
and
like
I got my first cavity in an adult tooth when I was over the age of 30. And believe me, my wife is obsessive about caring for her teeth, like your daughter's. Insane. And I, you know, I try to remember to brush twice a day. And I have, like, no cavities in my mouth, and her mouth is riddled with,
you do
know.
Eat a lot of saltwater taffy. I know that's not for air, but
I'm saying you're exactly right. If the idea that somehow this is linked, that it's your fault, that you drank soda, that you didn't brush your teeth, that you didn't – we know it's not true. It's not true. Avoiding the soda is not going to prevent you from getting cavities. Your kids are a perfect case example of that.
Michael?
I can speak to that very thing. You know, I grew up really poor, never had care for my teeth, and I've never had a cavity. I'm 37, and I drank some soda growing up, and my wife grew up rich with a ton of care for her teeth and had tons of cavities.
I think the big question there is would your wife marry you, I think, also. I mean, you got to wonder.
Tell me and we'll both know.
All right, Michael, thanks. Quickly to Chris, Alfred, and Melanie on this before I wrap it up, take a break, and come back to potentially some more important issues. Any thoughts on any of all of this soda conversation and how many new Twitter followers did Aaron Carroll get? And Alfred, by the way. Guys, what do you think?
Don't drink sugary stuff.
Burr,
I mean, burr, I grew up with burr, a burr, burr. Mom as a dietitian.
Seriously.
So
no
she
thoughts?
Just said, don't have sugary
don't
drinks.
Wasn't really paid attention.
I mean, but what am I supposed to say?
I think when I throw to you, I always feel like you guys are bursting with wanting to say something. I go to you and it's like,
look, I think people should be thrown in jail for drinking sugary soda.
There you go.
That's what needs to happen
was
right
that
now.
So hard? Chris?
I've been drinking sugary watered things my 35 years, and it's terrible. And I would say that it's the reason I have body shape issues. But I've stopped recently, and I cut it out. And I'll drink diet soda at work for the caffeine, but I maybe drink a can over the course of the 3 hours. But even still. Whether I think that soda is good for you or soda is bad for you, and I tend to agree that it's bad for you, obviously, and we definitely should keep it away from children. I still don't think it's something that should be regulated.
Cut off his mic.
Okay, but see, again, that's my point, and I think everyone's going to take home that I'm saying the sugar is great for you. No, I said right at the beginning, I don't let my kids drink sugared soda or incredibly small amounts of it because they are empty calories, and you shouldn't have too much of it, and we should try to get people not to drink it. It's the ban and the way that it's being enacted in New York, it's the policy that I have a problem with, not the idea that soda's awesome and that we should drink it by the gallon. I don't. I think it should be, we should have much less of it in the same way we need to eat much less of everything else. It's empty calories. It's unnecessary. Everybody's consuming too much of it. It is probably linked to the obesity epidemic. But the policy that everybody is screaming and fighting for, that's what I have a problem with.
All right. Thank you, everybody. But Melanie, did you want to say anything? I'm sorry.
I'm just going to make sure that I only have my Diet Coke with lemon and extra ice whenever you're in studio.
And Dr. Carroll, I know you wanted to plug that you are giving a talk at the Sugar Companies Worldwide Organizational Meeting, Annual Meeting this weekend.
Yeah, he has three whole new followers.
Sugarland.
Everybody else loves
and they're probably
soda.
Horrible.
Wow. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk about the Affordable Care Act and a lot of other things and take plenty more phone calls. I always love debunking myths as well with Dr. Carroll. That's why you should get his books and be following him on Twitter. If you're not, I mean, maybe we have tapped out all of our but I feel like the second hour you haven't been on, I really am let down. At Aaron E. Carroll, if you're not following him, you should now. And we'll be right back with more with the good doctor.
Coming up, more of this program. Stand Up with Pete Dominic. Indy, Sirius XM 104.
All right, we are back. And we are joined by the good doctor in our second hour here. He usually joins us in the third hour on Wednesdays. Dr. Aaron Carroll is associate professor of pediatrics, soon a full professor, actually, at the Indiana University School of Medicine. And much, much more. He has a B.A. in chemistry from Amherst College and an M.D. from the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine. And you have an MD from one of the best colleges in the United in the world. You got your MD. Why don't you practice medicine as much?
You're dissing Amherst? You don't think Amherst is any good?
No, it's great. I'm just saying that I don't know if Amherst. I guess Amherst is a good school. Yeah, it's a great school.
Oh, you guess? Okay.
I mean, it's not Ivy League. You went to an Ivy League grad school.
Well, that's because
I would think
Ivy
there's
League,
more.
Ivy Leagues are universities, and I wanted to go to a college.
What's the difference between a university and a college?
No graduate students whatsoever. No graduate
and
programs.
I know. I knew that. My listeners didn't know. So why don't you practice medicine as much? You still do.
I do.
Practice.
I mean, I'm a pediatrician, and I still go to clinic. I just
What is clinic?
I mean, clinic is like a it's like an office, but there's lots of it's an office, but it's mostly staffed by residents, so it's the same as going to the office. We just call it clinic. I'm not exactly sure why. It's a good question. But, I mean, I go to office.
It's stupid, I think. It's confusing to people who don't know what it is.
I'm sorry. Well, I go to work in the office, not as much as I do research. But I decided when I was a resident and probably in some classes before then that I wanted to spend more of my time trying to fix the system than trying to fix sort of individual patients. And that's where I wanted to devote my time.
When my daughter has, like, the little white chunks in the back of her throat, is that food? Because for me, it's food. And I can get them out, or is it like a sign of strep or something? A little white child. If you look into the mouth of a child,
yes,
and you see that white clunks.
Yes. The problem is that could be either. I'd have to. I would
really.
Have
it could be. It could be either, though.
Yes, it could be. I mean, theoretically, anything white. It could be food. It could be. It could be back. It could be an infection. It could be the viral thing. I have to look.
Yeah, I know it's gross.
Does it hurt her?
Yeah, she's got a sore throat right now, and we saw those.
Then I would be a little more concerned. I probably, that's something I'd have someone take a look at.
How big of a deal is lice?
Well, they're a huge deal in the fact that they literally destroy families. As far as every female friend I have, every mother is insanely obsessed with lice, including my own wife. They imagine it's the scourge of everything. But
I know bed bugs are that for me. We had that, and they are terrorists. But what are lice? I never had an experience with lice, and I never will now. Sadly,
you don't have hair.
I beat you to it.
You're too fast. Well, that's because I'm polite and I try not to speak over you. so they get into hair and then they sort of just they live there and they grow and then they get into other kids' hair. There's really no other bad effects in the long run. I mean, people
do they hurt if you had? Do they?
No. Sometimes you see kids itching because you might feel it, but they don't really hurt. You don't really notice.
So what's the big deal? I mean,
they're super infective and they get into stuff and they just pass through kids like wildfire, especially like in the summer at camp or in a classroom. And this is why you see it all the time in kids and not so much in adults. It's just because kids live in a world where they just share stuff that goes from head, and they're so close to each other in close contact all the time that it just spreads like wildfire and you just want to get rid of them.
Keith, who called the show, at Keith K. Kaplan, said I should just take a picture of Ava's throat and send it to you, and you can diagnose.
Yeah, there you go.
How many times would you say I've called you for issues? It's been a while. But about my daughter.
Not often. But you know what? I want to tell a story, but I feel like I'm betraying confidence. But someone else related to the program has sent me a picture of his child for diagnosis before. That person should call in if he's interested. But I won't betray.
It's got to be Eric Siegel.
I'm not betraying any confidences. I'm not saying anything.
Really?
Anybody. And I was happy to do it. So
gotta
not
be Siegel. I don't know either, but I bet it's Siegel. He would do that, and he
did not. I was more than happy to do it. It's happened before.
All right. I don't know what else I want to talk with you about. I guess there's always a ton to type up. I think that when we get to when we talk about the Affordable Care Act, when we talk about Obamacare, I think that one of the we've talked about a lot of things over and over, but I think that one of the things that's being debated right now, and I saw this over the past couple weeks, is certainly that there are a lot of conservative policy types coming out and warning conservatives to stop really going after the Affordable Care Act, because now it's in place. It's in a lot of states, the exchanges are going to start next year and people are going to like it. And it's a bad. I mean, you've obviously followed this. We haven't talked about it, but Ramesh Panaru and others. What's going on in that debate with those folks?
Well, I think that, you know, they've been screaming for years and years and years that this is the end of days. It's tyranny. It's going to be the worst thing that ever happened to America. And it's not going to happen. You know, you have to go back through history. Again, Medicare, Ronald Reagan has a famous speech where he described, if Medicare passed, it would be the end of freedom. I mean, literally.
Long before he was president, when he was just kind of an activist and an actor.
The end of freedom. And I mean, this is Medicare. You know, right now that the Republican Party is like fighting never to have cut ever, that it's, you know, the most American apple pie thing ever. You know, Medicaid, again, was going to result in bankruptcy and horror, and everyone was going to, and, you know, it's 40, 50 years later, and Medicaid is now so, apple pie, that threatening to remove it was deemed coercive by the Supreme Court, that it's so entrenched and so necessary to America that we can't even threaten to pull funding from the federal government for it, or that's like putting a gun to their head. So these arguments have been done before, and they lose, and you can see what happens 50 years later. Medicare is now so entrenched and so beloved that we can't even talk about touching it. And, you know, the same thing is happening with the Affordable Care Act. We'll spend some time hearing about how it's the end of freedom and death and everything else. And then when people realize that, oh, my God, I'm getting a subsidy to buy this health insurance and no one would ever sell me before, and now it's at a price that I actually can afford, so my kid who has asthma is going to have coverage, well, that's going to be great. You know, and it's like people will have heard for years that it's the worst thing ever, but for a significant number of people, it's going to be phenomenal. Everybody getting Medicaid who didn't have before is going to love it. They had nothing before. Now they're going to get Medicaid. It's going to be millions of people. People before who had, you know, who are 55 and had, you know, had a past episode of breast cancer, well, all of a sudden have insurance that's remarkably cheap and likely getting a subsidy to help them buy it. They're going to love it. There's a group of people who probably are not enamored of the bill right now. They are young, single, reasonably wealthy males who might otherwise be 30 years old and not want to buy insurance, or 28, but then they'll be forced to buy a policy, and it'll probably be a couple $100 a month. It might be because they make a good living and they won't get a subsidy, but they'll know that 20 years later they'll be able to get that same policy for the same price. And so, you know, if they get sick or if anything happens, everything gets better. So the vast majority of people are going to like this probably once it actually kicks in. I think there's a growing recognition that it's actually going to kick in next year. It's not – there's no longer this, well, maybe we can stop it before it starts. You know, the exchanges are supposed to go live in October so people can start purchasing insurance. The Medicaid expansion kicks in on January 1 of October, you know, of 2014. It's going to happen. And once it does happen, it's going to be hard to campaign about stopping something. It's now going to be campaigning to take something away from you. Oh, you have Medicaid? I want to take it away. Oh, you have insurance that you can now afford and you're getting a federal subsidy? I want to take it away. And that is going to be difficult to campaign on. And it's hard to turn the ship around when it's this big and it's been going for so long. But I think you're going to see a growing number of conservative commentators and conservative leaders who are going to realize that shifting that argument from we need to take something away from you is going to be politically unpopular. And it's going to be hard to continue to run for office saying that.
Let me get you to take – I knew I wanted to ask you something pretty big, and I completely skipped my mind. But, this abortion bill that passed in the House, only in the House, and a lot of these bills have passed at the state level, and they've gone after Planned Parenthood and other places that provide abortion as part of what they do. But this abortion bill that passed in the House, I want to just play this quick clip to blow your mind. This guy's in OB-GYN, I believe. He's a doctor, Congressman Burgess. I want to play this for you and just get your take on it. Here it is.
Mr. Chairman, well, this is a subject that I do know something about. And I will just tell you, from the delivery of thousands of babies, attending thousands of women during their pregnancy, performance of thousands of sonograms, there's no question in my mind that a baby at 20 weeks after conception can feel pain. Fact of the matter is, I argued with the chairman because I thought the date was far too late. We should be setting this at 15 weeks, 16 weeks. You watch a sonogram at a 15-week baby, and they have movements that are purposeful. They stroke their face. If they're a male baby, they may have their hand between their legs. I mean, they feel pleasure. Why is it so hard to think that they could feel pain? Yeah. Sometimes we have to give voice to the voiceless, and this is one of those times.
So, I mean, what's, I guess what's your reaction? I mean, I do have some very specific questions about that. But
first of all, I would love to know why.
Did you masturbate as a fetus?
Why only males?
Well, that's what we asked earlier. Alfred said we were reading far too into that, and he wasn't referencing
it. I just feel like it's as an example of he was talking, it's seemingly off the cuffish, and it's like we're looking so hard to find gaffes in this culture, and he said something we're like, oh, it sounds like he's talking about fetuses masturbating, and
we were looking
for something, and we think totally. We found it, and I don't really care.
He's not talking about masturbating to that orgasm, but he's saying that a male putting his hands between his legs is evidence of a purposeful, pleasurable movement. That's exactly what he said. How else could that be interpreted?
Oh, but people are, like, the headline in a lot of the blogs are saying,
well, of course,
Congressman says masturbating
blog.
In the fees, like, yeah, the baby's pundit. Masturbating in the womb. And I'm like, I feel like that's
but
inaccurate.
Let's back up. He was saying, regardless, his point was that fetuses feel pleasure. And the reason I know that is because males make purposeful movements between their legs. Do you disagree with that?
It seems like that's what he was saying. Yeah, but he was giving examples of how they might feel,
so girls
how they feel pleasure.
And boys put their hands between their legs.
I guess. I just feel like it's, again, it's soundbite culture. We're reading so much into a tiny little soundbite that it just seemed like it seems slightly more innocent than what people are making it out to be.
I think that the problem when we, and this happens again and again when we get into this area, is that as the arguments get debunked and as that science gets put down, they keep searching for more and more extreme reasons why we need to stop doing this stuff, whether it be that, like, women don't, you know, get pregnant when they're raped, or that, you know, they can stop it by choice. We have, in other words, oh, well, everybody seems to agree that, like, abortion is, you know, we're not thrilled with abortion, but that we need to have exceptions for rape. Well, then they got to find a reason not to have the exception for rape. We think abortion needs to be stopped at 24 weeks, but 20 weeks is okay. You know, 20 weeks, but 20 weeks. So we can't have 20 weeks. You got to come up with a reason why. People went after pain for a while. Well, pain has now, to some extent, been debunked. Now we're going to go after pleasure. Well, how are we going to do pleasure? We got to come up with a good reason. This is how you get into that stuff. It's because you have to keep coming up with reasons to justify what sort of science and evidence keep telling you is just not so.
Well, what are you talking about specifically, though? I mean,
because for a long time people went after pain in the fetus, and there's been a ton of science recently to sort of debunk that. So he's saying, well, pain, not just pain. He's saying his experience tells him, not science, not evidence. His experience of looking at sonograms tells him that fetuses experience pain and pleasure. And what does he have as evidence of this pleasure? What would he present? Well, I see that some babies stroke their face, and males put their hands between their legs. I mean, that's a little crazy. I mean, but what else are you going to pull up for how a fetus experiences pleasure? If you need to come up with that rationale, if you need to come up with a reason to sort of say, well, we can't have abortions at 20 weeks because fetuses experience pleasure, give me a reason. How would you know
that? I've seen sonograms of a fetus reading the New York Times.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like, this is what it was. Like, you have to, like, you reach deep. You got to go deep. You got to come up with something. And this is what he came up with. Unfortunately, it was sort of bizarre. And to be honest with you, what I was really struck by was, like, again, the idea that, like, he's only, in other words, in his mind, if the males put their hands between their legs, that's for pleasure, but the girls don't do it? That was just odd. If he'd
said, well, I don't think girls would ever put their hands between their legs for pleasure. At any age, I mean, unless they want to burn in hell. But listen, this debate has to do with always has to do with, you know, when life begins, of course. And we're never, I suppose, going to convince certain people on that debate. But I think that when you hear about 20 weeks, that's a pretty well-developed fetus, and so it's really hard for people, a lot of people who might be, you know, pro-choice, not necessarily anti-abortion, but still be like, you know what, I do draw a line at a certain time, and I think it's about 20 weeks when that baby looks like a baby, and it's, a 11 inches long and a pound in weight, and I don't think that you should be able to have an abortion then.
But again,
would any woman carry a fetus for that long and then have an abortion?
Why, are you asking me, or you're saying?
I'm saying, you know, all the things you hear, yeah.
Well, okay, but the reason, there was a great article in the New York Times recently, because sometimes, you know, women might not find out that they're pregnant for a couple months. Because
that's hard for people to believe. It's just hard for people to believe that a woman.
Well, it happens all the time. You can spot, you can, you know, your periods are irregular, or it happens all the time. And then you find out that that you live in a state where there's only one place that provides an abortion, and it's across the state, and there's a 48-hour waiting period, so you're going to have to get a hotel for 2 days, and you're probably going to need to save up money to take the trip across the state to stay overnight in a hotel because you don't have it because you're poor. So now you need to save up money for a couple of weeks in order to get there. Then you finally get there and find out for some reason that, like, it's not working that way or something else. So it happens all the time. You got to go read the article in the New York Times. It happens all the time. There are rational reasons that people wind up having to wait longer than they might have expected. And because, to be honest with you, people keep putting up impediments to getting abortion with the hope that they get you to pass the somewhat arbitrary line in the sand that they drew. Because, again, you just said, it's like, well, I just think at 20 weeks it should be fine. Why 20? Why not 20 and a half? Why not 19?
I don't think that.
It's an odd sort of line that we drew. And so, you know, usually they pick a month or they try to do it, and usually we use viability. So at like 24 weeks, if a baby is born, 24 weeks – there's a decent chance that we can keep that baby alive. Now, they're probably going to have major problems for the rest of their life, but we can often keep that baby alive. But at 20 weeks, no. I mean, we just can't. Like, it's just not possible. It just doesn't happen. Hasn't happened yet. And you know, I don't think it's going to happen anytime in the near future. Those
really, it's not possible.
No, I said not possible today. Huh. You know, at some point, we might be able to grow you in a lab from a cell. I don't know. But today we can't do that.
Dr. Aaron Carroll is a pediatrician and talking about the very sensitive issue of abortion and these laws. And, you know, it's just, I don't mean, isn't it rare, 20 weeks abortion? Isn't that fairly rare in terms of when abortion?
Oh, the numbers, the sheer numbers? Yeah, I mean, it is relatively rare. For no other reason than a lot of states have put those, you know, the brakes on that kind of stuff. And you know, there are in some states, few, if and maybe there may be none, I'm not exactly sure, people who will actually do late-term abortions. I mean, the I can't remember his name, unfortunately, but the man who was killed a couple years ago in the Midwest, he was like the only late-term abortion provider in the state. And so
Tiller.
When he was killed, when he was killed, that was it. Like, there is no other place in the state to get an abortion late.
So that worked. Killing him worked.
Unfortunately, yes. And in some sense, so it's.
I think that clinic reopened recently.
You hope it does, just because, again, otherwise I don't know how that's anything but terrorism. But it's still just the problem is if you want to make an argument that is a morally based argument that you just don't like abortion, fine. But when you try to start bringing in your scientific or medical credentials to try to come up with rationales for something for which there is no scientific or medical evidence, more often than not, you wind up saying something silly because you wind up having to try to create something out of your medical scientific experience that has no medical or scientific
basis.
And the rest of us will call you on it.
All right. Well, we're out of time. As always, we really appreciate when Dr. Aaron Carroll joins us. If you appreciate it, you should give him a follow on Twitter. That's the way we pay our expert guests. And how did he do? Not very good today, huh?
Big soda. Not good.
No, you went after soda and people were very disappointed.
I think your wife probably unfollowed me.
At Aaron E. Carroll, 2 R's, 2 L's. Thanks, Aaron.
Anytime.
We'll come back and talk immigration. That should be boring, right? Here on Stand Up. We'll be right back.